That's not to say that one way is right and the other isn't, but they are very different viewpoints on the best way to spend the high-energy years of your life. It's way too early, says Ivan, 20, when I ask him if most people in their early 20s are ready for a committed relationship, such as living together or getting married. We are still young and learning about our lives, having fun and enjoying our freedom. Being committed shuts that down very fast. We will often just leave our partner because we are too young to commit. In general, relationships conflict with the individualistic notion that you don't need someone else to make you happy, you should make yourself happy. That is the message I Jenners grew up hearing, the received wisdom whispered in their ears by the cultural milieu. In just the 18 years between 1990 and 2008, the use of the phrase, make yourself happy, more than tripled in American books in the Google Books database. The phrase, don't need anyone, barely existed in American books before the 1970s, and then quadrupled between 1970 and 2008. The relationship unfriendly phrase, never compromise, doubled between 1990 and 2008. And what other phrase has increased? I love me. I question the assumption that love is always worth the risk. There are other ways to live a meaningful life, and in college especially, a romantic relationship can bring us farther from rather than closer to that goal, wrote Columbia University sophomore Flannery James in the campus newspaper. In iGener's view, they have lots of things to do on their own first, and relationships could keep them from doing them. Many young iGeners also fear losing their identity through relationships or being too influenced by someone else at a critical time. There's this idea now that identity is built independent of relationships, not within them, says the psychologist Leslie Bell. So only once you're complete as an adult can you be in a relationship. 20-year-old James feels that way. Another person could easily have a large effect on me right now, and I don't know if that's necessarily something that I want, he says. I just feel like that period in college from 20 to 25 is such a learning experience in and of itself. It's difficult to try to learn yourself when you're with someone else. Even if they go well, relationships are stressful, iGeners say. When you're in a relationship, their problem is your problem too, says Mark. So not only do you have your set of problems, but if they're having a bad day, they're kind of taking it out on you. The stress alone is ridiculous. Dealing with people, iGeners seem to say, is exhausting. College hookups, says James, are a way to find instant gratification without the trouble of taking on someone else's baggage. That way you don't have to deal with a person as a whole. You just get to enjoy someone in the moment, he says. Social media may play a role in the superficial, emotionless ideal of iGen sex. Early on, teens, especially girls, learn that sexy pictures get likes. You're noticed for how your butt looks in a sink selfie, in which a girl sits on a bathroom sink and takes a selfie over her shoulder, Kim Kardashian style. Not for your sparkling personality or your kindness. Social media and dating apps also make cheating extremely easy. Like, your boyfriend could have been talking to somebody for months behind your back, and you'll never find out, 15-year-old Madeline from the Bronx said in American Girls. Love is just a word. It has no meaning, she said. It's very rare you will ever find someone who really likes you for who you are, for yourself, your originality. Rarely, if ever, do you find someone who really cares. There's another reason iGeners are uncertain about relationships. You might get hurt, and you might find yourself dependent on someone else. Reasons that intertwine with iGen's individualism and focus on safety. I think it's good for people to be on their own for a while, too. People who are so heavily reliant on relationships for their whole source of emotional security don't know how to cope when that's taken away from them, says Haley, 18, whom we met earlier. A relationship is impermanent. Everything in life is impermanent. So if that's taken away and then you can't find another girlfriend or another boyfriend, then what are you going to do? You haven't learned the skills to cope on your own, be happy on your own. So what are you going to do? Are you just going to suffer through it until you can find someone else who will take you? Haley's view is the famous couplet, better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all, turned on its head. To her, it's better not to have loved, because what if you lose it? This fear of intimacy, of really showing yourself, is one reason why hookups nearly always occur when both parties are drunk. Two recent books on college hookup culture both concluded that alcohol is considered nearly mandatory before having sex with someone for the first time. The college women Peggy Orenstein interviewed for Girls and Sex said that hooking up sober would be awkward. Being sober makes it seem like you want to be in a relationship, one college freshman told her. It's really uncomfortable. One study found that the average college hookup involves the woman having had 4 drinks and the men 6. In American Hookup, one college woman told Lisa Wade that the first step in hooking up is to get shit-faced. When you're drunk, you can kind of just do it because it's fun and then be able to laugh about it and have it not be awkward or not mean anything, another college woman explained. Wade concluded that alcohol allows students to pretend that sex doesn't mean anything. After all, you were both drunk. The fear of relationships has spawned several intriguing slang terms used by iGeners and young millennials, such as catching feelings. That's what they call developing an emotional attachment to someone else, an evocative term with its implication that love is a disease one would rather not have. One website offered 32 signs you're catching feelings for your fuck buddy, such as you guys have started cuddling after sex, and you realize that you actually give a shit about their life and want to know more. Another website for college students offered advice on how to avoid catching feelings for someone, because college is a time of experimentation, of being young and wild and free and all that crap. The last thing you need is to end up tied down after the first semester. Tips include, go into it with the attitude that you're not going to develop feelings towards this person, and don't tell them your life story. It ends with, don't cuddle. For the love of God, this is a must. Whether it's while watching a film or after a steamy session in the bedroom, do not go in for the hugs and snuggles. Getting close to them literally is going to mean getting close to them emotionally, and that's exactly what you don't want. Don't indulge in those cuddle cravings, and if needed, make a barrier of pillows between you. Hey, desperate times call for desperate measures. Maybe I'm just a Gen Xer, but this sounds like someone frantically fighting against any kind of actual human connection because he has some idealized idea of being wild and free. Humans are hardwired to want emotional connections to other people, yet the very concept of catching feelings promotes the idea that this is a shameful thing, akin to being sick. As Lisa Wade found when she interviewed iGen college students, the worst thing you can get called on a college campus these days isn't what it used to be, slut, and it isn't even the more hookup culture consistent, prude. It's desperate. Being clingy, acting as if you need someone, is considered pathetic. Then there's ghosting. That's when someone you've been talking with, flirting with, or hooking up with suddenly stops texting you back. It's the most passive way to break up ever invented, worse than the dreaded Gen X post-it note. Ghosting, wrote Columbia University first-year student Madison Ailtz, isn't your run-of-the-mill rejection. This is rejection that leaves you in a state of utter confusion. Ailtz believes that ghosting is a product of the constant array of choices offered by digital media. We are hardwired to constantly search for the best thing possible, even if it's at the expense of someone else. This has resulted in a new social norm, to suddenly pretend like that person doesn't exist. It also sounds like a generation without the social skills to know how to break up with someone. Many millennials and iGeners have ended up someplace in the middle, not merely hooking up, but also not settling into a committed relationship. As Kate Hakala wrote on Mike.com, there's a new status called dating partner that's somewhere between a hookup and a boyfriend. Dating partners have emotionally deep conversations, but don't move in together or meet each other's parents. Hakala calls it the signature relationship status of a generation and explains it might all come down to soup. If you have a cold, a fuck buddy isn't going to bring you soup, and a boyfriend is going to make you homemade soup. A dating partner? They're totally going to drop off a can of soup, but only if they don't already have any plans. Here's the irony. Most iGeners still say they want a relationship, not just a hookup. Two recent surveys found that 3 out of 4 college students said they'd like to be in a committed, loving relationship in the next year, but about the same number believed that their classmates only wanted hookups. So the average iGen college student thinks he is the only one who wants a relationship when most of his fellow students actually do too. As Wade says, there's this disconnect between brave narratives about what they think they should want and should be doing and what, in a way, they do want. As a 19-year-old put it in American Girls, everyone wants love, and no one wants to admit it. I'll get married. Someday. Will iGen eventually catch up in the relationship department? Maybe. iGeners are just as likely to say they want to get married. 77% of 12th graders said so in 2015, exactly the same as boomers in 1976. There's also been little change in the percentage who say they would prefer to have a mate for life or who definitely want to have children. iGeners' attitudes toward marriage are a little less positive than previous generations' views, but not for the reasons you might expect. iGeners are more likely than their millennial predecessors to question marriage because there are so few good ones and are less likely to say their lives will be happier if they marry. However, that's not because they think having just one partner is too restrictive. Fewer iGeners believe this than boomers or even millennials did. By far the largest shift, iGen is more likely to believe that it's a good idea to live together first before you get married. So, iGen sees marriage as less mandatory and questions the institution more, but it's not due to some longing for a perpetually promiscuous life. The bigger question is, what are iGeners' priorities? Do they think marriage and family life are important? Given iGeners' move away from in-person social interaction, it's worth considering what they think of marriage and family, the primary social interactions of adult life. In 1976, boomer high school seniors rated having a good marriage and family life higher than any other life goal. By 2011, however, marriage and family had slipped to fourth, behind finding steady work, being successful at work, and giving my children better opportunities than I had. The last likely focused on economic issues. Marriage and family remained at fourth in 2015. Overall, significantly fewer iGen 12th graders felt that marriage and family life were important compared to millennials, and fewer college students believed that raising a family was important. When the boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials were in college, students rated raising a family either highest or second highest. During the millennial years of 2002 to 2007, raising a family was rated highest each year. By 2008, though, being very well off financially had muscled its way to first place. By 2015, raising a family had slipped to third on the priority list, behind being very well off financially and helping others in difficulty, the first time that had occurred since it was included on the list of life goals in 1969. It stayed in third place in 2016. Marriage and children are just not as high on iGen's priority list. iGeners' uncertainty about their economic prospects may play a role in their rejiggering of priorities. I think the biggest problem in having children is wondering whether I'll be able to provide a secure and comfortable lifestyle for them, wrote Miles, 22. I don't want to have a child when I'm not sure if I'm going to have a job tomorrow. iGeners may also see marriage as less important due to their own childhood experiences. 36% of iGen babies were born to unmarried mothers, up from 25% during the millennial birth years. Perhaps as a result, more did not live with their father or even a stepfather. These statistics contradict the common view that iGen was more carefully nurtured by fathers. Having a dad at home or even around was more common, claims Gen Z at work. Actually, it's the opposite. Fewer fathers even lived in the same household as their kids. Then there's the question of timing. When do high school seniors expect to get married? In the 1970s, most expected to get married in the next 5 years. But by 2015, only 39% did. That's a 22% decline just since 2007, suggesting that iGeners will continue the trend toward later marriage begun by Gen Xers and millennials. A lot of people are putting off marriage so they can fulfill their dreams and desires without having to answer to someone else, wrote Andrew, 22. The shift in the average age at first marriage since the 1960s has been enormous, increasing by 7 years over 5.5 decades. In 1960, the median age at first marriage for women was 20. Thus, half of the women getting married for the first time back then were teenagers. That rose to only 21 in 1970, when the first wave of boomers was coming of age. Then, the age started to climb and it hasn't stopped since. In 2015, the median age at first marriage for women was 27.1. The average age for men also shot up from 23 in 1960 to 29 in 2015. Marriage is beginning to be seen as something only old people do. As Caitlin, 22, puts it, marriage is boring because you're stuck with the same person for the rest of your life. It's like having chicken every night for dinner. So people are waiting until they don't have any other option but to get married. Think about it. When was the last time you received an invitation to the wedding of two 23-year-olds? The percentage of 18 to 29-year-olds who are married was cut in half in just 8 years, from 32% in 2006 to 16% in 2014. Getting married young is now so uncommon that when Barnard College student Melissa Luxenberg got engaged in 2015, the campus newspaper ran a story on it, headlined, "Engaged at 20." Whereas previous generations married young and figured out their economic prospects together, many iGeners have a long list of things they think need to be in place before getting married. You'd better have a job that is stable and is high-paying or be close to your ideal life before getting married, wrote Harrison, 21. Settling so young without an education and no business skills is going to be a disaster down the road. You need to get all this right before being in a committed relationship. The requirement of having a steady job in place is especially problematic for this generation, in which one out of four men in their early 20s is not working at all. Americans aren't just waiting longer to get married. Fewer are getting married at all, with the U.S. marriage rate reaching all-time lows in the 2010s. This is likely to continue for iGen. More iGeners than any other generation were raised by unmarried parents or single mothers. Marriage does not feel mandatory to them. Marriage is not a necessity anymore, wrote David, 22. We live in a society no longer blinded by social dogma, and people are allowed to do what they want. Okay, so maybe more people are living together. After all, high school students are now much more likely to say that's a good idea. Sure enough, more young couples now live together while unmarried than in previous generations. But in the last decade, something interesting has happened. The percentage of unmarried young adults living with a partner has stayed about the same, while the percentage who are married has plummeted. That means that more young people are truly single, not married, and not living with anyone. Millennials and iGeners are putting off not just marriage, but live-in relationships entirely, with fewer young people living with a partner at all. By 2014, more 18 to 34-year-olds were living with their parents than with a spouse or romantic partner. So, not only are high school students less likely to date and young adults less likely to have sex, fewer are living in committed relationships, and fewer anticipate marriage and family being a priority. iGeners are also less likely to hang out with their friends, at least in person. All in all, iGeners are increasingly disconnected from human relationships, except perhaps with their parents. Not sure if I want kids. The economic squeeze facing millennials and iGeners makes having children challenging. College debt loads are at record levels, housing costs have soared, and childcare often costs more than rent. Children are expensive, and it's tough to be able to afford to have more than one. While I would like to have children at some point in my life, I think one of the major challenges in doing so would be financial, wrote Tyler, 23. It just seems so costly to raise kids, and being able to afford them would probably require more than one income. Ava, 22, says, I already have a child, and the most challenging thing has definitely been the money management of it all. It takes a lot of money to raise a child. With iGeners prioritizing financial success over family, and many facing economic challenges, more of them will not have children, plunging the birth rate to all-time lows. Economic woes may be part of the reason millennials, right before iGen, are waiting longer than any previous American generation to have kids. In the 1950s, women aged 20 to 24 had the highest birth rates of any age group. Just since 1990, the birth rate for women in their early 20s has plunged by 36%. Over the same time, the birth rate for 35 to 39-year-olds has increased by 63%. iGeners will undoubtedly continue the trend toward later motherhood, with more women having their children in their 30s, often their late 30s or early 40s, which is about the age limit of both natural fertility and current fertility techniques, including IVF. It remains to be seen whether new fertility technology will be able to extend fertility even later. If it can, many millennials and iGeners will be interested. The profound shifts in attitude toward sex, marriage, and children have fundamentally altered the reproductive life course. On average, boomer women had their first child only about 2.5 years after they first had sex. With earlier sex and later births, Gen X lengthened that interval to 7.5 years. Millennials and iGeners wait to have sex and to have children, with 8.3 years from first sex to first birth. For the first time, the entire reproductive timeline has shifted later. This can be a difficult waiting game for iGeners. Evolution has shaped humans to want to reproduce earlier in life, and the time between sexual maturity and reproduction keeps growing. I have 7 siblings, and all I have wanted since I was 8 is a family of my own. I really scared my mom all through high school when I kept telling her that I just want to have a baby, wrote Janelle, 18, a nursing major at SDSU. Yet, her typical for iGen fears and lack of experience with relationships don't make contemplating marriage easy. Marriage scares me, she admits. I have never been in a long-term committed relationship, so the thought of spending the rest of my life with one person is frightening. All in all, iGeners want kids, but fear they might not be able to afford them, and are frightened of the long-term adult relationships that often go along with having them. What will the future hold? There are several possible scenarios. First, iGeners will have children but will choose to do so in more unconventional arrangements. With their caution around relationships, more may choose to have babies on their own, and fewer will feel the need to live with their partner if they do get pregnant accidentally. Take Louis Tomlinson of the boy band One Direction, whose former flame, Brianna Jungwirth, announced in 2015 that she was pregnant when they were both 23. The pregnancy was a surprise at first, but he and Brianna were very, very close friends, and this has brought them even closer, a friend of the two told People. Although they aren't in a relationship, their friendship is extremely strong and they are both really excited about the baby. Perhaps this will become the new iGen model of parenthood. We won't get married or even live together or be in a relationship, but we will be good friends and raise our baby together. Or not. By 2016, Tomlinson and Jungwirth were embroiled in a custody dispute that had begun when Tomlinson started dating someone else. Such situations make it difficult to have more than one child, and many people want to raise children with a partner. If committed relationships become less common, the birth rate might decrease too. Several signs point in this direction. Fewer Americans are having children outside marriage, after rising, for decades, the percentage of babies born to unmarried mothers declined from 52% in 2008 to 40% in 2015. With marriage being put off ever later and fewer women having children outside marriage, childbearing is increasingly being postponed until one's 30s, if it happens at all. The trends all seem to be going the same way. Fewer young adults are having sex, fewer are in committed relationships, and fewer prioritize marriage and family. The high cost of housing and childcare make having children, particularly more than one, economically challenging. All of these trends suggest that fewer iGeners will ever have children, and that only children will become more common. The United States will increasingly resemble Europe, where birth rates are below replacement level and marriage is optional. The move away from relationships and children might be a permanent trend instead of just a postponement. If so, iGen will be on track to be the generation with the largest number of single people in U.S. history and the lowest birth rate on record. Chapter 9. Inclusive. LGBT, gender, and race issues in the new age. When the Supreme Court ruled in June 2015 that same-sex marriage was legal nationwide, Snickers tweeted a picture of a rainbow-wrapped candy bar, inscribed, "Stay Who You Are." AT&T turned its globe logo to rainbow hues, and American Airlines tweeted, "We're on board. Diversity strengthens us all, and today, we celebrate, hashtag, marriage equality." It's rare for companies to chime in on social issues, as they'd rather not alienate their customers. For a company like American, headquartered in Texas, that could be a lot of customers. But American and other companies are looking toward an iGen future, seeking to appeal to the young consumers who will fuel their bottom line in years to come. Companies know that embracing equality is not just an expectation for iGen, it's a requirement. From LGBT identities to gender to race, iGeners expect equality and are often surprised, even shocked, to still encounter prejudice. At the same time, equality issues are far from resolved, creating divisions within iGen as well as generation gaps that can seem like unbridgeable gulfs. The equality revolution has been breathtaking, but incomplete, leaving iGen to come of age after 2017 when issues around LGBT rights, gender, and race were suddenly back in contention. LGBT, love wins. Cameron has always known about gays and lesbians. His uncle is gay, so he can't remember a time when he thought same-sex relationships were out of the ordinary. Perhaps, as a result, he takes it for granted that same-sex marriage should be legal. "There's no plausible reason to be against same-sex marriage," he says. "Saying you can't marry who you want to doesn't let gays and lesbians exist as equals." The oldest iGeners were starting preschool when Will and Grace, the first sitcom with a gay man as a central character, premiered in 1998. And in elementary school, when shows such as Queer Eye for the Straight Guy made being gay not just mainstream but fashionable. iGen teens grew up watching Glee, which featured several gay, lesbian, and transgender teen characters, and they saw numerous celebrities come out. Compare that to boomers, who were young when gay men were still getting arrested at Stonewall. Gen Xers, who were teens during the extreme homophobia of the AIDS crisis, or millennials, who were adolescents when President Bill Clinton signed the bill outlawing same-sex marriage, and Ellen DeGeneres found her sitcom abruptly canceled after she came out. In contrast, many iGeners will barely recall a time before same-sex marriage was legal. And they'll remember Ellen as a popular talk show host married to the actress from Arrested Development, which they watch on Netflix. As the country singer Kacey Musgraves, 28, sings, "Make lots of noise and kiss lots of boys, or kiss lots of girls if that's something you're into." Not exactly your father's country song. But it is iGen's country song. "I believe people should do what they want with their own bodies," Musgraves says. "The majority of the younger people that listen to my music don't think twice about the things I'm singing about." The 2000s and 2010s ushered in a sea change in attitudes toward lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, LGBT, people. These are some of the largest and most rapid generational and time period differences in existence. Even many conservative Republican iGeners now support same-sex marriage. Anthony Laveris, the vice president of the University of Pennsylvania College Republicans, said in 2013, "A true conservative should endorse empowering Americans to marry whom they love, not limit them." The vast majority of iGeners see no reason why two people of the same sex can't get married. We don't know how much of the shift is due to a generational trend, affecting only young people and not older people, and how much to a time period trend, with people of all ages shifting in their views. Because the General Social Survey, GSS, includes adults of all ages, we can compare the views of all ages and generations in recent years to see the current generation gaps. By 2014 to 2016, boomers, Gen Xers, millennials, and iGeners were all nearly universally supportive of a gay man teaching at a local college. Only silent generation members over 70 weren't as sure. Views of gays and lesbians' personal lives, however, differ more by generation. In 2014 to 2016, a slim majority of Gen Xers still found something questionable about sex between two same-sex adults. In contrast, two-thirds of iGeners and younger millennials saw nothing wrong with gay-lesbian sexuality. Support for same-sex marriage follows a similar pattern. Even in recent years, LGBT issues have produced a significant generation gap. For many iGeners, LGBT issues are tightly linked to their innate individualism. They take acceptance of others so much for granted that you can almost hear them yawn. My view of LGBTQ is the same as on other people having sex before marriage. I don't particularly care, wrote Riley, 17. I wouldn't do it, but it has nothing to do with me. It doesn't affect me in the slightest, and I have no right to tell other people what to do or believe. I wouldn't go to a protest for it or anything, but they can do what they want. 12-year-old Harper captures the view of a generation who likely won't remember a time before same-sex marriage. I've never really thought anything about it, she said, when I asked her what she thinks about same-sex marriage. When you see two people of the same sex together, it's just like you think it's normal. You never really thought they were different or weird. You kind of just thought they're the same people as you, just like a different gender. Even many religious teens embrace same-sex marriage. Emily, 14, whom we met in Chapter 2, attends church regularly with her family in suburban Minneapolis. When I talk to her older brother, he tells me that their church views marriage as between a man and a woman. But when I ask Emily about same-sex marriage, she says, I'm proud for those people. They fought through everything. It's letting everyone be themselves and everyone can be happy. When I ask her how she thinks her generation is different, she says, people aren't afraid to be who they are. Even in the South, the issue is not at the forefront as it once was. At his historically black church in Georgia, 20-year-old Darnell says the pastors never, like, bring it up. I think because the LGBT community is so big now, maybe we don't touch that. Even with the large changes in attitudes, a third of iGeners still have some issues with same-sex sexuality, and one in four questions same-sex marriage. These young people often struggle to reconcile their iGen upbringing with their religion's viewpoint that homosexuality is wrong. Sophia, 18, and I meet for lunch at the food court on her university's San Diego campus. She was born in South America and came to the United States as a small child, growing up in a small town in the high desert of California. A strikingly pretty young woman with beautiful brown eyes and a kind smile, she attends church every Sunday and believes that sex should be saved for marriage. She and her boyfriend, who was her first kiss in eighth grade, have already discussed getting married someday. When I ask Sophia what she thinks of the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage, she says, that's a tough one for me. I don't think some people are less deserving of happiness than others. God made everyone in his perfect image. There's not a mistake. Oh, she likes girls. It makes me really sad when Christians condemn other people for who they are. That's not really the point of being a Christian at all. It's supposed to be the complete opposite, accepting people for who they are and still love them anyway, because that's what Jesus did. And that's something they forget quite a lot. Yet, she says, it's problematic when gays and lesbians act upon their desires. God didn't say they are sinful for being gay. Their choice is more acting upon it and acting upon their sexual desires. That's where it becomes difficult, since marriage was meant for a man and a woman. But I don't believe they are less deserving of happiness, and when they don't act on it, they're missing out on some of that happiness. Sophia has reconciled her Christianity and her belief that people should be who they are, but has not yet accepted the realities of homosexuality or same-sex marriage. Yet Sophia is the exception among iGeners, and with the legalization of same-sex marriage, acceptance will continue to grow. If younger generations are more likely to believe that there's nothing wrong with gay and lesbian sex, does that mean they are more likely to have it themselves? They are. The number of young women who have had sex with at least one other woman has nearly tripled since the early 1990s. More men now report having had a male sexual partner as well. It's possible that more people are simply willing to admit to such experiences, rather than more actually having had the experience. Either way, reporting of same-sex sexual experience is on the rise. There is a particularly large generation gap in lesbian sexual experience. Among women born in the 1940s and 1950s, only about 6 in 100 had had a lesbian partner during her lifetime by 2014 to 2016. But among those born in the 1980s and 1990s, nearly 1 in 7 already had, even though she'd lived decades less. Millennial and iGen women are much more likely than their predecessors to have had sex with another woman. Bisexuality, having sex with both male and female partners, is also on the rise. The percentage of adult Americans with bisexual experience during their lifetimes tripled between 1990 and 2016, from 3% to 11%. This might reflect recent trends on college campuses known as LUG, lesbian until graduation, or BUG, bisexual until graduation. Women who have lesbian relationships while young and then date and marry men, also called hasbian. Overall, the large increase in bisexual experience suggests that many people are having sex with both men and women without necessarily identifying as gay, lesbian, or bisexual. Generally, only about 4% of the population identifies as LGBT, but many more have had some experience with same-sex sexuality. This flexibility around the gender of sexual partners has led some iGeners to say that people should no longer be labeled based on their sexual orientation. 20-year-old Georgia college student James says, "I'm not much of a label person. I would date someone because they make me happy, not because of what their gender is." He told his parents he was gay instead of bisexual because, he told me, "I know they don't understand that ambiguity that our generation deals with." Several millennial celebrities have also resisted labeling their sexual orientation. Raven Simone said, "I don't want to be labeled gay. I want to be labeled a human who loves humans." Miley Cyrus says she's had relationships that weren't straight and notes, "I'm not hiding my sexuality. For me, I don't want to label myself as anything. I am ready to love anyone that loves me for who I am. I am open." Young and trans. iGen will likely be the first generation to understand what the term transgender means from an early age, partially due to Caitlyn Jenner's transition from male to female in 2015. Transgender individuals are coming out at younger and younger ages. In January 2017, National Geographic featured Avery, a 9-year-old transgender girl, on its cover. Jazz Jennings, 14, was born a boy but knew since she was 2 that she was really a girl. Diagnosed with gender dysphoria when she was 5, the iGener stars in her own reality show, I Am Jazz. She now questions the idea that she needed to be diagnosed at all. Looking up the definition on her phone during an interview for Cosmopolitan, she says, "Diagnose. Identify the nature of an illness or other problem by examination of the symptoms. Do I look like I have an illness? Do I look like I have a problem? Being transgender is not a problem. It is not an illness. It's just who you are." Full acceptance of transgender individuals may take some time. James has a transgender brother. At first, his parents assumed his sibling was a lesbian. Then, when he came out as trans, my dad was like, "What's that?" James says. The relationship between my brother and my dad was very, very rocky and very awful for a long time. His father just didn't seem to understand what being transgender meant. He said, "I have a daughter. That's who she is." He would reference it as a game, saying, "He goes around and he wants to be dressed as a boy. He wants to be dressed as male and all his friends are playing along with it. He can say he's male all the time, but when you take the clothes off, you still have a biological female there." My father didn't understand. He couldn't comprehend that. Most of the teens I interviewed weren't sure what to think about transgender issues, finding it difficult to reconcile their individualistic, be who you are philosophy with the reality of someone who feels he or she is a different gender from his or her body. Emily, who supports same-sex marriage, is not as sure about her attitude toward transgender individuals. I disagree about changing your gender because I think you were born how you're supposed to be, she said. When I ask high school senior Kevin about transgender people, he replies, like Bruce Jenner? It's kind of weird for me because they actually change their own sex. They weren't born that way. I feel like they're denying their previous existence. They're not true to themselves, and I kind of don't like it. Athena, 13, says, I don't agree with being transgender because I think the way God made you is the way you should stay. God made everybody on this planet the way he wanted it. I don't know why you would want to change the way God made you. They're just confused. Other teens, especially those who had learned about transgender people in psychology classes or who knew a transgender person, were more understanding. Ben, the 18-year-old from Illinois, knew a transgender boy at his high school. Ben and his friends accepted him, but the process was far from easy. Among other things, it took an extraordinarily long time for the boy's name to be changed in all of the school records, and not everyone knew what to do. Everyone wanted to be supportive, but no one really knew how to be supportive, Ben said. Leo, the Los Angeles high school freshman, disagrees with those who say things such as, God doesn't make mistakes. It's not their business to tell people what to do and what not to do, he says. Transitioning is something transgender people are doing for themselves and not hurting other people. If they want to be transgender, then they can be transgender. Leo's viewpoint will become increasingly common. Once iGeners understand more about transgender people, that by changing their sex they are being true to themselves, their acceptance will follow, and quickly. But many are not there yet. Gender roles. Who does what? Gender is not what it used to be. One Stanford University psychology professor asked her class to divide up into gender categories, whatever categories they chose, and it could be more than two. Most divided into male and female, but a sizable minority decided that their group would be called fuck gender. They didn't want to be categorized into one gender, they said. They preferred no gender label at all. Partially inspired by transgender individuals, there's a nascent movement to declare that gender is fluid, not just changeable, but also not easily contained by just two categories. Will Smith's son Jaden, 16, caused a sensation in 2015 when he wore a skirt to his prom. College senior Justice Gaines, interviewed for the student newspaper at Brown in 2016, asked to be identified with the pronouns Z, Zem, and Zer. Thus, the article contained the sentence, Z felt pressure to help Zer peers cope with what was going on, Z said. Others prefer to use they as a pronoun for a single person, such as Miley Cyrus's 2015 date, Tyler Ford, whom she described on Instagram as a queer, biracial, agender person whose pronouns are they, them, theirs. My whole life I was led to believe that there were only two genders, Tyler said. I thought I had to shrink myself to fit into a box that was never going to contain me. This movement toward gender fluidity may be picking up steam, but it's still far from the average response or average experience. In the public eye, you are either male or female, and there is no acceptable in-between state. When Caitlyn Jenner transitioned from male to female, she did an interview with Diane Sawyer as a man, in which she had slightly longer hair but wore men's clothes, and then went underground for 4 months to modify her appearance to become female. She conformed to the traditional idea of gender as a binary, one interview as a man, then a sexy, barely clothed Vanity Fair cover as a woman. She was not allowed, or didn't wish, to be in between, at least not publicly. Not only is gender not fluid, but American society continues to struggle with gender equality. Many debates center on family responsibilities. Who takes care of the baby? Who cleans the house? Who goes to work? In a video I show to my psychology classes, young children asked these questions don't hesitate. They point to the Barbie doll for who takes care of the baby and who cleans the house, and to the Ken doll for who goes to work. The movement toward accepting working mothers has been fruitful, but incomplete. Between 1977 and the mid-1990s, More and more Americans agreed that working mothers could have just as warm a relationship with their children as mothers who did not work. After 2010, support for working mothers steadily grew until 3 out of 4 high school seniors believed a working mother could have just as good a relationship with her children as one who stayed home. In addition, a majority of iGeners disagree that a preschool child is likely to suffer if the mother works. Priscilla, 18, sees benefits for both mothers and children when mothers work. "Kids get a lot out of going to preschool and socializing with other kids their age," she wrote. "As much as I can't wait to have a child, I know that I will also want to continue to work. I think a child will see their mother's work ethic and develop strong ones of their own." iGeners are unprecedented in their beliefs in gender equality. That might be due to their own childhood experiences. 2/3 of 2015 high school seniors said their mother had worked all or most of the time when they were growing up. More than double the number of class of 76 boomers who had that experience. However, supporters of gender equality shouldn't celebrate too soon. The surveys also ask whether it's best for the man to achieve outside the home and the woman to take care of the family. Disavowing such rigid family roles peaked during the early 1990s, but then lost ground. 12th graders who disagreed that the husband should make all the important decisions in the family also peaked in the 1990s, at 70%, falling to 61% by 2015. Even set against the backdrop of the previous gains, it is shocking that 2 decades of progress for women in the workplace have resulted in more traditional attitudes toward family roles. However, there are early signs, just since 2014, that iGen teens and young adults are turning this trend around, bringing it into line with their other views of gender equality and banishing the backlash created by millennials. It's possible that this shift toward the traditional stems from the trends we explored in the last chapter. With fewer young people in relationships, teens may view male-female partnerships in increasingly traditional terms. If you want to avoid these gender roles, they might think, don't get married or even live together. Or perhaps iGeners believe that working mothers don't harm children, but it's still best, as the question puts it, when she can stay home. Alternatively, sociologists David Cotter and Joanna Pepin point out that these 2 questions, unlike those about working mothers, explicitly mention men, suggesting the shift toward conservatism may be due to a longing for men to return to their traditional role as breadwinners. Women may have to work, they seem to say, but wouldn't it be great if men could be men again? Some iGeners think it would be best to have a traditional division of labor, but they also recognize that's not always economically feasible. "Personally, if I had a kid, I would like to stay home at least until they were in school. But that's just me, and I'm one person. Other people have different needs and desires," wrote Carly, 19. "I'm sure a lot more women would stay home if they could, but they can't, because nowadays, both parents have to work and families are just barely making ends meet." Vanessa, 19, isn't sure she could both work and have kids. "Even if you get, say, 6 hours of free time after work, you're going to be completely exhausted and won't be able to pay as much attention to your kid as they maybe need. I think maybe it is best if at least one parent doesn't work. But that might not be realistic," she wrote. 12-year-old Harper told me, "I feel like it would be pretty stressful trying to work and have little kids at the same time because, like, you never really get a break because you're at work and then you have to come home and work with them. I would rather just take time off of work and stay home than be tired all day and then having to deal with, like, 3 kids. Studies find that children do just fine, both academically and emotionally, when both parents work. But these iGeners seem more concerned with the effects on themselves and their partners. They sound tired before they've even begun. Just as with LGBT attitudes, we can look at recent data to see the generation gaps as they are right now. They show a surprise for gender roles, only small generation gaps between iGeners, millennials, and Gen Xers. Not until you reach the silent generation in their 70s do attitudes shift decisively toward the more traditional. At least on these questions, iGeners and younger millennials are only a little more progressive in their gender views than Gen Xers in their 40s are. and indistinguishable from older millennials in their late 20s and early 30s. In other words, the generational change in gender role attitudes has stalled. This is in contrast to LGBT issues, where iGeners and millennials show a notable generation gap from previous generations. Race, all together now, but somewhat reluctantly. All that crap about people's race or sexuality or whatever, no one our age cares about any of that, said a young man in a college course recently, according to the New York Times. The professor of the class says that's the norm. She's continually impressed by the total ease with which Black, Hispanic, Asian, and white students of all ethnicities interact with one another. Over several years, I've never had a single incident of disrespect. Yet that same school year, protests over racial issues rocked college campuses around the country. Men driving by in a truck yelled the N-word at a student body president of the University of Missouri. At Claremont McKenna College in California, a Latina student posted on Facebook, "I feel uncomfortable as a person of color every day on this campus." University of Wisconsin students started a Twitter hashtag, #TheRealUW, to tell their stories of racism on campus. Frat boys telling you you're cute for a Black girl. When you get told to go back to Mexico by a person in your class. I hear racist things toward Asians every day on campus, but no one here cares. I've never felt fully respected here. Depending on whom you believe, iGen is either the most racially equal generation in history or rapidly ushering in a return to old-fashioned racism. Which view is right? Mostly the first, but there's still a long way to go. On the subject of iGeners supporting racial equality, they and the millennials are much more likely to support Black Lives Matter than our older generations. In a 2016 Pew Research Center poll, 60% of white adults ages 18 to 30 said they supported Black Lives Matter, compared to 37% of 50 to 64-year-olds, Gen Xers and Boomers, and 26% of those 65 and older. Silence. I am white, and I support the Black Lives Matter movement. I think it is important that people express frustration with the way police are treating minorities in this country, wrote Jason, 20. I think it is good that attention has been called to corruption and poor policing. It probably should have happened sooner. On August 9, 2014, 18-year-old Michael Brown was shot dead by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. Several other high-profile cases of Blacks shot by police followed, and teens' attitudes about the police and racial tensions shifted abruptly. In just 1 year, from the spring of 2014 to the spring of 2015, 29% more 12th graders believed the police were doing a poor job, and 2.5 times as many thought that Black-white race relations had gotten worse, attitudes last seen during the racially charged 1990s. This rise in racial discomfort in 2015 also presaged the racially polarizing presidential campaign of 2016 and the rise of the white nationalist alt-right. For a decade or so, it looked as though Americans had worked things out. We'd elected a Black president, anointed Beyoncé the queen of all media, and flocked to Shonda Rhimes' dramas on ABC. But it was a fragile truce, and by all appearances, it's over. In a March 2016 Gallup poll, 54% of college students said there had been protests on their campus about diversity and inclusion in the last school year. Issues around race are particularly salient for iGeners, who have been surrounded by racial diversity their entire lives. In 2015, most 12th graders said their high school was at least half another race, double the number in 1980. 3 times more said their close friends were of other races. iGeners don't just go to diverse schools, they also interact with people of different races in many different settings, and say they have gotten to know people of other races this way. College student Darnell, who is Black, says, I've been blessed to be surrounded with Latinos, white people, Black people, Asians, all types of people, and I think that broadened my horizons. Carly, 19, also views living in a diverse neighborhood as a positive. I live in Ypsilanti, Michigan, which is like 40% Black, and in my surrounding neighborhood, almost all my neighbors are Black or Hispanic, she wrote. I am white, so that makes me a minority here. I grew up in a town that was 99% white, and I was nervous moving here, like an idiot, but it turns out that it is exactly the same as anywhere else, except there are more black people. iGenteens have experienced a record-setting amount of diversity in their schools, neighborhoods, and activities. But what would they prefer to experience? Here, the picture is more complex. On the side of progress toward racial equality, the number of white teens who think an all-white environment is best has been cut in half to a small minority. In addition, the number who think primarily other race environments are desirable has doubled. But that's not the whole story. Surprisingly, the number of white teens who say that diverse environments, those in which some people are of another race, are desirable, is just 1 out of 4 and has not budged since the 1970s. The number is only somewhat higher among black and Latino teens, 1 out of 3. Despite iGenner's greater experience with those of other races, and even though most say those experiences have been positive, most of them describe diverse environments as merely acceptable, not desirable. If a racially diverse environment is merely acceptable, it goes a long way toward explaining why racial incidents continue to occur on college campuses, and why the 2016 election season gave voice to a white nationalism some had thought no longer existed. Apparently, the average iGen teen tolerates diversity, but is not sure it's the ideal system. The same trend appears in personal relationships. White teens who say that having a close friend, boss, or next-door neighbor of another race is desirable are in the minority. That number is about the same as in the 1990s, though iGen has started a trend toward changing that just in the last few years. Black and Latino teens are a little more likely to favor cross-race relationships, with half viewing having a close friend of another race desirable in 2015. Overall, these preferences help explain why the white kids still sit together in the high school cafeteria. When I interviewed iGenners about this, most said diversity is acceptable instead of desirable for a quintessentially iGen reason. Race doesn't matter. Living with other races would be acceptable because I honestly do not understand what the fuss is about racism. The color of skin is just that, a color. It doesn't tell you what they feel inside, what their motivations are, or their goals in life, wrote Lori, 21. I don't care if my neighbors and coworkers were different. I don't care if I'm the only white person. As long as everyone can treat everyone with the same respect, then I don't see a problem. William, 20, found that mutual interests are more important. As a black guy, I'm really into metal and other kinds of rock music, he wrote. I'm also a huge World War I buff. Not too many people in my area, mostly black, are into those things. I just happened to meet a cool guy that was into that stuff, and he happened to be white. I don't go out of my way looking for white people to be my friend. It just comes naturally. People get so caught up on race, if they look a little deeper, they might find that people are not so different after all. I got the impression that these iGenners didn't want to choose between diversity being acceptable or desirable because they saw the whole question as ridiculous. As Heather 20 wrote, race has nothing to do with qualifications of a person's ability to be a manager. What is this, the 50s? Francie 20 wrote, in this day and age, it seems silly to still be seeing in color with regards to dealing with humans. I'm white, but I don't care about color when it comes to my friends because it's idiotic and close-minded to be trapped in an archaic mindset. Saying that diverse environments were desirable might have indicated a little too much interest in race, and if you are iGen, you aren't supposed to notice race. This iGen theme of ignoring race crops up again when we consider how racial issues are discussed on college campuses. Not seeing race has advantages, but it also overlooks the different experiences of students of color and ignores the reality that people do, of course, see race. When a conservative guest on The Daily Show said, "I don't see color," host Trevor Noah responded, "Then what do you do at a traffic light?" The idea of ignoring race might also be at the root of the surge of white nationalism if some whites feel that their race is not being recognized. The history of 2014 to 2016 might well suggest that pretending race doesn't exist is not a viable strategy. In other ways, however, racial attitudes in the United States have shifted substantially toward equality. The percentage of whites who wouldn't want a close relative to marry a black person plummeted from 54% in the early 1990s to 10% in the 2010s. Many iGeners can't even comprehend why anyone would oppose interracial marriage. I'm honestly not too sure why interracial marriage was ever an issue in the first place, but I think it's more accepted now due to the public's shift toward racial acceptance, wrote Anthony, 19. Most people in America have access to information that can refute claims about purity of race, which is a racist idea created by white people in the first place. That mixing races was ever seen as bad or immoral honestly confuses me. The percentage of whites opposed to living in a mostly black neighborhood or who support housing discrimination has been cut in half. Yet, about the same percentage of white adults believe that blacks are lazy. Jaden, 21, thinks this might be due to media coverage. While there is coverage of other races also doing crime, there seems to be an incredible focus on showing African Americans doing illicit activities, he wrote. This nonstop negative portrayal of African Americans on news programs and documentaries has a significant effect on how people view them. It's also interesting to explore the generational divisions in recent years, 2014 to 2016. The biggest differences are between the silents, those 70 and older, and everyone else. There are also some surprises. White iGeners and young millennials are the generations most likely to believe that blacks are lazy, and are slightly more opposed than older millennials are to living in a mostly black neighborhood. This could be the ignorance of youth, or it could be a sign of a return of a form of white nationalism. On college campuses, discussions of race often center on issues such as affirmative action in university admissions and scholarships. With income inequality and high student loan debt, some white students resent what they perceive as the special treatment of students of color. One University of Wisconsin student posted to Yik Yak, "There's a black girl on my floor constantly bitching about oppression. Bitch, I scored 12 points higher than you on my ACT, yet you have a full ride and I got zero scholarships." When Rutgers University student Ivana St. Fort was admitted to 7 colleges, her high school friends told her it was only because she was black. Reverse racism resonates with iGen. In a survey of 14 to 24-year-olds conducted by MTV, 48% of whites agreed that discrimination against white people has become as big a problem as discrimination against racial minority groups. 27% of people of color agreed as well. The vast majority, 88%, believe that favoring one race over another is unfair, and 70% believe it's never fair to give preferential treatment to one race over another, regardless of historical inequalities. That includes 74% of whites and 65% of people of color. iGeners believe in their version of equality so much that many find it difficult to support affirmative action. When racial preferences collide with economic burdens, racism on campus is sometimes the result. iGen may usher in a new era of affirmative action, but based on class rather than race. In 2015, 52% of entering college students, in the American Freshman Survey, agreed that students from disadvantaged social backgrounds should be given preferential treatment in college admissions, up from 37% in 2009. iGeners are fiercely supportive of equality, but they see equality as going beyond race. All in all, iGeners have had more experience with racially diverse environments than any generation before them, and the vast majority say they believe in equality. Whites are much more willing to have black neighbors or relatives by marriage, though these shifts have appeared among older generations as well. The number of white teens who think an all-white environment is desirable has been cut in half, but the number who think a diverse environment is desirable has barely budged. Social psychology studies have found that mere contact among the races is not enough. The contact must be positive and among equals. Although iGeners are clearly more racially progressive than previous generations at the same age, they are far from post-racial. They are also not post-gender, and for both race and gender issues, they look similar to millennials and Gen Xers in recent years. iGeners do stand apart on LGBT issues, however. That's where there is a sizable generation gap, with iGeners leading the way toward more equality and acceptance. Safe spaces, disinvitations, and trigger warnings. In the past few years, college campuses have erupted in protests, many of them focused around equality issues. But there are other themes as well. Many protests focus on eliminating not just discrimination, but offensive speech, which has drawn criticism that iGeners exhibit a hair-trigger sensitivity. This is where the movement for equality collides with the First Amendment. To the distress of free speech advocates, campuses have bias reporting systems that allow students to report incidents that offend them. Faculty members have been suspended for leading discussions about race. Controversial speakers are increasingly disinvited or their talks disrupted. Is this really a cultural change, or have college students always been this way? The overtime data show that things really have changed. iGeners are more likely to support restricting speech. Young adults in general are also more likely to agree with speech restrictions. The Pew Research Center found that 40% of millennials and iGeners agreed that the government should be able to prevent people from making offensive statements about minority groups, compared to only 12% of the silent generation, 24% of boomers,